Hello, my friends. It's Friday, April 11th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belleville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. And talk about undisclosed mountain hideaway today. I don't know if you can hear it. Maybe my noise reduction keeps it out of your ears. But flying directly overhead, we've got logging helicopters this morning. That's right. They're clearing the timber out of a nearby mountain and flying right over Rolla J Studios. Kind of throwing me for a loop this morning. I don't know if you can hear them, but I apologize for that. We'll do the best we can because it is Friday. And what a Friday it is. So many stories to go over this morning, beginning with some amazing news coming out of our Supreme Court, a unanimous 9-0 decision demanding the return of Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia, the El Salvadorian man that the government admits was sent to our gulag, our concentration camp in El Salvador, by mistake. We'll talk more about that. Also coming up, we'll talk about the Democratic Party that continues to shoot itself in the foot in the face of on creeping fascism. The latest news on the vote for the SAVE Act in the United States House that now moves on to the Senate. We've got news coming out of RFK Jr., the anti-vax wacko who's in charge of Health and Human Services, who's announced there's a September deadline for discovering the cure for autism, because that's how science works. Also, we take a look at Mad King Felon and his insatiable need to be fluffed by the people around him. Pretty embarrassing stuff coming out of, I keep telling you, we're going North Korea style here with the praise of dear leader. We'll show you how Brooke Rollins, the Secretary of Agriculture, laid it on pretty thick. And we'll tell you about the people who don't lay it on thick and what happens to them with the tale of Sir Egregious Leaker, the disseminator of falsehoods, and news from our space base in Greenland. Then we'll take a look at sports, where something came across my social media feed about a female fencer named Stephanie Turner who forfeited a match against a trans fencer. And it opens up the questions about why certain sports are sex segregated in the first place. Then we'll get to our Boycott Idaho segment, where we've got some updates on previous stories. Most horrifically, the story of Victor Garcia, the young autistic boy who was shot in Pocatello, Idaho. We'll give an update on his status. Also, the status of Dr. Teresa Borenpaul, the woman a couple of months ago who was dragged out of a Coeur d'Alene town hall meeting by unmarked thugs, and a update on a show your papers law in the state of Idaho that's currently under injunction. And speaking of show me your papers, our radical rant today is about ICE and a new graphic out from our Gestapo that says they stop illegal people, money, products, and ideas. ICE is now stopping illegal ideas. We have definitely gone to 1984 in this one, haven't we? But before we get to all of that, I got a couple of things to clear up at the beginning here. First of all, let's take a look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which we've been watching since Tariff Palooza began. Gosh, what was it, 9 days ago now? The Dow Jones currently trading at 25 points down. It's been mostly in the red all morning, a couple of spikes into the green, but the market manipulation continues because folks realize that Trump didn't actually pause all the tariffs. He came back and said there'd be a 90-day pause, and then the market went up 3,000 points. Then over the last couple days, people have recognized, wait a minute, not all the tariffs have gone anywhere. In fact, the tariffs with China have continued to increase. Trump increased them from 125% to 145%, which led the Chinese to increase their tariffs from 84% to 125%. But at what point is this just beginning to resemble a couple of kids, you know, like the old Pee Wee Herman thing? Infinity, infinity plus one, no take backs. This is just a crazy way to run an economy, and it's leading some of these high-end finance guys to ask the question, is Donald Trump just nuts? Is he just insane? And folks, that's what it is. There's no 3D chess here. There's no brilliant gamesmanship here. Trump thinks of a trade deficit as a zero-sum game. Like, if I buy $50 from you, you're supposed to buy $50 from me, whether or not you've got anything I want to buy. We've made this example before, you know. I've got a trade deficit with Kroger every time I go and buy groceries, but there's nothing I have to sell to Kroger, and I need those groceries. He's an idiot, folks. Once we start getting around the fact that he is mentally not there, he's a dummy. He sees everything in terms of numbers, and if his number isn't bigger than your number, he wants to make his number bigger. Doesn't matter what the numbers mean, doesn't matter how the numbers work. He's an idiot, folks. But then, speaking of idiots and trying to fight back against them, the leadership in the Senate, Chuck Schumer, finally got around to responding to this thing. The fact that Donald Trump had announced these 90-day tariffs, the market crashes, and then Trump gets on his Truth toilet and tweets out, "Now is the time to buy, DJT." And soon enough, we have this massive spike amongst the billionaires who made more money in one moment than ever in human history. Bloomberg reported this, that the billionaires made a killing on buying the dip at that point. Marjorie Taylor Greene bought some of the stocks during the dip as well. It's calling to senators asking about whether or not this was insider trading. And some 28 hours later, Chuck Schumer finally posted on it, saying, this is very suspicious how Donald Trump said to buy trust stocks now. Is this manipulation? Is this insider trading? Once again, asking questions rather than making accusations. Let's just go straight to Chuck Schumer here and see what he has to say about Trump's tariffs.
I just finished a speech on the Senate floor, longer than I usually give, to document what a terrible week it was for the Trump tariff tax. The tax will have lasting effects on people. It will create instability. Costs will go up. People will worry about the future, all because of the incompetence, the sheer incompetence of Donald Trump and his staff. We documented how the staff is busy sniping at each other. We documented how every day Trump had a different explanation as to what he was doing and why he was imposing these tariffs. And we documented how many people will be permanently hurt by the sheer incompetence, idiocy, and dishonesty of this administration. These tariffs were a fiasco. Everyone knows it. He went all in and then he had to back off. It's an example of how incompetent and dishonest this administration is. But worst of all, it's an example of how this administration really doesn't give a hoot about the average American. That morning, when Trump knew his tariff tax was a disaster, he told people to buy. We want to know who bought. Was it his cronies, his inside friends? The American people didn't know what to do, and most of them were left holding the bag. We ought to have a full investigation. I hope people will pay some attention to the speech I gave. It was really important to document the dishonesty, the incompetence, and harm that this is doing to the American people.
Well, I agree. We ought to have some hearings on that. We ought to get to the bottom of it, but start making some accusations. Just come right out and say it. Donald Trump is manipulating the market. Donald Trump does not know what he is doing. He is doing this to enrich his friends. And speaking of enriching his friends, we had a vote that just came down from the House of Representatives. The House voted to end the Biden-era cap on non-sufficient funds fees, the junk fees that you get at your bank for the bounce check or the overdraft, that had been capped at $5. Well, the House just voted to end that cap. So they just said, go ahead, bankers, charge what you want, put it, jack it back up to $35 for an NSF fee. Everything the money people want is coming to fruition. I am thrilled with the amazing news coming out of the Supreme Court that ruled 9-0 that the federal government must effectuate the return of Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia. He was a man that was detained by ICE agents and subsequently rendered to our concentration camp in El Salvador. And the latest update on this is that the Supreme Court sent this case back to the original federal judge to determine how to effectuate that release. And so this went back to U.S. District Judge Paul Zinnes of Maryland, who just hours after the Supreme Court ordered DOJ to begin releasing Garcia, he called a case for this afternoon, Friday afternoon. He ruled that the government acted illegally by deporting him, and he is to be returned to the United States. Zinnes said the administration must take all available steps to return Abrego Garcia as soon as possible. Judge Zinnes also wants to know information on the location of Abrego Garcia and his custodial status, what steps may be taken to facilitate his return, and what steps they will take when he is returned to the United States. The Justice Department asked for more time to respond to the order, asked for a delay for the hearing, but the judge denied the request, calling the deportation of Abrego Garcia, quote, wholly illegal from the moment it happened, and that the administration should have already been taking steps to return Abrego Garcia, writing, quote, the government continues to delay, obfuscate, and flout court orders while a man's life and safety is at risk. The government's request for an extension is, quote, another stunning display of arrogance and cruelty. And that's something we have to understand in this case, is the delay tactics that Trump always uses to skirt justice in this case could lead to this man being killed. He was ordered not to be deported to El Salvador because he was in danger there, in danger of being tortured or murdered by gangs. Now, the United States claims that he was a member of MS-13, but showed no evidence that he was a member of any sort of gang, and admits they sent him there by mistake. So every day, every hour they delay getting him out of that prison is another chance for him to be killed. And I just fear this is a situation where the United States government really doesn't want this man back on U.S. soil, really doesn't want this man in front of cameras and microphones telling exactly the horrors that are going down there in our name, with our taxpayer dollars, at our concentration camp in El Salvador. So let's get him released as soon as possible. Every day delay is a risk to this man's life. And one other thing about this, I just happened to think about this, that our concentration camp is in El Salvador, which is Spanish for the Savior. What better indictment of American Christianity could you have that we would illegally rendition immigrants to some place named after Jesus? Back to Washington, D.C. for the latest bit of news, where the U.S. House of Representatives have passed the so-called Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, or SAVE Act, in a 220 to 208 vote. The shocking thing about this is not that the Republicans in the chamber they control were managing to pass this anti-voting rights law. The shocking part is that four Democrats joined with them. Representative Ed Case of Hawaii, Representative Henry Cuellar of Texas, Representative Jared Golden of Maine, and Representative Marie Glusenkamp Perez of Washington joined with the Republicans to vote for the SAVE Act. Now, according to the American Civil Liberties Union, the SAVE Act could end up disenfranchising up to 69 million American women. Because what this is all about is it's a solution in search of a problem. The legislation here is to combat the non-existent problem of illegal, undocumented people in our country voting in elections. It's to soothe the feelings of Donald Trump, who lost in the 2020 election and to this day contends that it was rigged
and part of the rigging, as he and the right-wingers like to contend, is the great replacement that Democrats are allegedly bringing in immigrants in large numbers to illegally vote in elections and vote for Democrats to tilt the election, which, again, I asked yesterday, why do you suppose they're always going to vote Democrat? What is it about hardworking people with brown skin that makes them not want to vote for Republicans? I can't figure that one out. But anyway, they're trying to solve a problem that is admittedly incredibly rare. The chance of someone voting illegally in our election who's not registered in this country is slim to none. It's like the one in a million thing. It doesn't affect any election anywhere. But so gung-ho are these Republicans to make everyone prove that they're a citizen, to try to keep the brown people from voting, that they're willing to disenfranchise 69 million American women. It works like this. The SAVE Act requires the states to verify the immigration status of anyone who wants to vote. So basically, they would be requiring you to have some sort of proof of citizenship when you register to vote. Now, that's not hard for some people. You got a driver's license with real ID, then that proves your citizenship. If you got yourself a birth certificate, shows you're born in the United States, that shows your citizenship. And, well, if you have a passport, that shows your citizenship as well. The problem is people's names change, especially women change their name from their maiden name to their married name. And trying to verify that your driver's license that has your married name on it matches your birth certificate that has your maiden name on it to prove your citizenship could be problematic for millions of American women. Not to mention the transgender people who have changed their name, or people of the Muslim faith. You remember Cassius Clay changed his name to Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali would not be on his birth certificate. How would he be able to vote? This could end up disenfranchising my mom. My mom, her maiden name is on her birth certificate, and her first name is misspelled on her birth certificate. It's misspelled. Jacqueline is misspelled with an L-I-N-E on her birth certificate, but all her life she's gone with an L-Y-N for Jacqueline. My mom might not be able to vote in the next election. She'll be 79 years old, has been voting since the 60s, and you're going to disenfranchise her over this SAVE Act. And Representatives Case, Cuellar, Golden, and Glusenkamp Perez thought that was a swell idea. Yeah, we ought to vote for that. How pathetic is this Democratic Party, and how pathetic is the leadership of Hakeem Jeffries that you can't whip a unanimous vote against the SAVE Act? You cannot whip a unanimous vote to protect the voting rights of women and Muslims and transgender people and anybody who might have changed their name in the past. How pathetic is it that you would let four Democrats vote to lose the midterms? Never mind the fact that this is talking about people's franchise, their right to vote. Even just from a self-serving political point of view, this is an act that, should it go into law, is going to cost Democrats votes. Women disproportionately vote Democratic. Muslims disproportionately vote Democratic. Transgender people disproportionately vote Democratic. Why would you vote to lose your own 2026 midterm race? Boy, the Democratic Party needs to come around on this and understand these aren't normal times. This is hardball time. This is lay it all on the line time. This is all in time. To have four Democrats betray us by voting for the SAVE Act is inexcusable. Now the SAVE Act goes to the United States Senate, and there is hope that it will not get past the Senate. A companion bill that was filed on this only got like a 53-47 vote. And in order to get past cloture, in order to break a filibuster, the Republicans are going to need 60 votes in the Senate. They're going to need seven Democrats or independents to cross the aisle and vote with them for the SAVE Act to pass. I hope that Chuck Schumer can keep the Democrats in the Senate in line and filibuster this thing and keep it from making it to the floor. Cory Booker already showed you how it's done. go on a fast, forego drinking the water, take to the stage and talk until you can talk no more, and then have someone lined up to talk after you until they can talk no more. This better not make the floor. This better not become law, or the Democratic Party, as we know it, is finished for winning any sort of national election. So Donald Trump held a cabinet meeting yesterday for the purposes of having people tell him what a wonderful boy he is. And during the fluffing, we had this from Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Give this a listen.
And we have, as you, we have now, the autism rates have gone from now, most recent numbers we think are going to be about 1 in 31. 1 in 12, so they're going up again. From 1 in 10,000 when I was a kid. And we are going, at your direction, we are going to know by September. We've launched a massive testing and research effort that's going to involve hundreds of scientists from around the world. By September, we will know what has caused the autism epidemic, and we'll be able to eliminate those exposures.
So big. Think of that. So it was 1 in 10,000 children had autism. And now it's 1 in 31. Not 31,000, 31. That is it. That's a horrible statistic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a horrible statistic because it's absolute bullshit. We'll explain that in a second. But first, I got to come back to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. because, you know, as a stoner myself, as a longtime pothead, it always cracks me up to hear him talk. It sounds like a guy who's just taken the biggest hit and trying to hold it in. Like, the problem for this autism research is
too many kids are 1 in 31,000 of
So, I don't know, maybe I understand him better because I've been in lots of rooms of people talking like that. But, all right, let's get to this stupid statistic. This is bandied around by the anti-vax people, this supposed massive increase in autism numbers. Like, suddenly we've gone from 1 in 10,000 kids had autism to 1 in 31 kids had autism. You know what's really happened? Is we've actually come to understand a greater range of behaviors that are autism. Now we don't have one autistic kid and one slow kid and one hyper kid and one gifted kid. And all those other kids also have the autism. You see, we're getting better at recognizing it and recognizing what a spectrum it is. In the 1 in 10,000 days, the autism kids were Rain Man, were the savants, the extreme ends of the spectrum. Nowadays, the autism kid is a broad range of kids that can go from just the slightly shy kid, the slightly quiet kid, the super smart kid, the really hyper kid. I'm pretty damn sure that at least 3/4 of the kids that I was in gifted and talented programs with in school would be now considered on the autism spectrum. But let's also talk about another aspect of this, is the idea that autism is something that needs to be cured, that we need to find a solution for. Autism is just another way of being. It's just another flavor of human beings. It's neurodivergence isn't a problem to be solved. It's something that we could better accommodate, for sure. Believe me. But it's not something that we need to be solving for any reason. And the other thing that bugs me about this is him going off saying that we're going to do these studies and by September we'll know what causes all the autism. That's not how science works. By September we'll know. We're giving you a deadline, science. Let's get all the information in and we'll review it all. And by September, we'll know exactly what. The only way that you can say you've got a deadline is if you already think you know what the cause is. dollars to donuts by September, the research is going to come back and say, oh, it's all these vaccines. It's all these vaccines are causing the autism. We need to stop all the vaccines. You know what? That's exactly where this is going to. It reminds me of this autism epidemic. It reminds me of post-marijuana legalization, how we had the gummy epidemic. Oh my God. The kids are overdosing on the cannabis. They're overdosing on the gummies. They're getting sick on the cannabis. Oh my God. There's a massive uptick in the calls to the poison control centers of kids getting into the gummies. Yeah. But how many calls to the poison centers before legalization were the kids who had gotten into something, but, it must be food poisoning. He must have gotten the flu or something. That's it. Because the parents were afraid to mention that they are cannabis users and the kid got into some cannabis because using cannabis could get them locked up in jail. There are all sorts of reasons why the reporting of a certain statistic may go up. And oftentimes that reasoning can be for factors that are independent from what the person saying the statistic goes up is saying caused it. There are all sorts of reasons, right? You have more shark attacks in the summer and there's greater sales of ice cream in the summer. That doesn't mean that ice cream sales cause shark attacks. Okay. They're just correlated to the summer. So whenever you hear people come out with statistics like this, when especially considering the scale, for something to go from 1 in 10,000 a few decades ago to 1 in 31 today, that ought to make anybody that can do critical thinking take pause. To go to a factor of 4 like that, or exponent of 4, whatever, increase that amount... I don't have the math in front of me, sorry. But that's just crazy. To go from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 31, there would definitely have to be some amazingly obvious cause making that happen. And it's not, folks. He's an anti-vax nut job. He's anti-science. The vast amount of scientific information and research on this shows that vaccines do not cause autism. And there is no so-called autism epidemic. I mentioned RFK Jr. speaking up at this meeting of the cabinet secretaries, which has descended us into full Pyongyang mode. We've gone full North Korean dear leader, with the cabinet secretaries taking their turns, putting on their knee pads and fluffing orange Cheeto Mussolini to the best of their ability. And I don't think anybody did a better job at this than the Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins. Let's hear from her.
Sir, first, we are, I would say, more than friends. We've all become family. And I think that what you have assembled in your vision is a turning point and an inflection point in American history. And so just being a part of that is the greatest honor. So thank you for that. And again, just the relationships here and the honor and respect we have for each other is a reflection of you and your leadership. So I just wanted to say that first. The second thing.
But you know what? Secretary Rollins actually doesn't tell any lies there, does she? What he has assembled in his vision is a turning point and inflection point in American history. Yeah, no doubt about that. We've definitely made the turning point from 80 years of Pax Americana. We've made the turning point from the U.S. dollar being the global reserve currency. We've made the turning point of having the greatest, longest unguarded border in the world with our friends in Canada. We've made the turning point on them being our dearest allies. We've made the turning point on China now starting to negotiate with the EU for trading since we've tariffed them to death. Yeah, definitely, Secretary Rollins, we have reached a turning point, an inflection point in American history. The problem is with you being proud to be a part of that. The problem's with you finding an honor in turning America around from being the shining city on the hill to being the place that disappears people to concentration camps extrajudicially. Yeah, definitely a turning point. So that's how you fluff dear leader there. You got to tell him he's the greatest boy and the nicest and the strongest and the handsomest leader out there. In the meantime, one of the ways you don't want to get on Trump's bad side is if you are the commander of the U.S. Space Force's base in Greenland. The story coming out of Greenland is Colonel Susanna Myers was fired by the head of Space Operation Commands for undermining J.D. Vance during his visit back in March. And before I move any further, I just want to point out that one of the things I will always hate Trump for, and there's a very long list, I will always hate Trump for creating the Space Force. Now, I'm not saying that we don't need a Space Force, that it's not a good idea to have a branch of the military dedicated to our exploration and commercialization of space. I think that's probably a good thing. I don't understand how it exists at the same time as we offload and privatize most of our space infrastructure to Elon Musk. But I'll always hate the fact that Donald Trump is the one that created the Space Force, and in doing so, ripped off the logos from Star Trek to make it. Just no creativity whatsoever. And we have to live the rest of our lives as the United States knowing that the Space Force was created by Donald Trump. It just bugs the hell out of me. But anyway, Colonel Myers was removed from her command by Colonel Kenneth Clock, KK. I wonder what his middle initial is. He is the commander of Space Base Delta One there in Greenland due to a loss of confidence in her ability to lead. Oh, and by the way, the Space Force Operating Center, their abbreviation is SPOC. S-P-O-C. So they often say, Spock said, like, how much more Star Trek ripoff can we get? But anyway, the problem is that Colonel Myers sent an email to all base personnel in regards to J.D. Vance's statements about Greenland. When he was back there in Greenland saying, yeah, we need Greenland needs to be a part of the U.S. Denmark's not taking care of Greenland. It's better for our security. And all the threats that Trump has been making about, you know, taking over Greenland. So she sent out an email saying that the base does not reflect those views, because at that base, we're not just, you know, U.S. What are they? Guardians, commander. What do we call the people that run the space in the Space Force? Yeah. Space cadets. Anyway, that it's not just them at the base. They also have people from Canada, Denmark, and Greenland. They got staff there from all over. And she was just trying to send an email out. It says, quote, I spent the weekend thinking about J.D. Vance's visit, the actions taken, the words spoken, and how it must have affected each of you. I do not presume to understand current politics, but what I do know is the concerns of the U.S. administration discussed by Vice President Vance on Friday are not reflective of the space base. I commit that for as long as I am lucky enough to lead this base, all of our flags will fly proudly together. And that's what got her axed, because she went against dear leader. According to the chief Pentagon spokesman, Sean Purnell, he commented on X that she was insubordinate, saying, quote, actions to undermine the chain of command or to subvert President Trump's agenda will not be tolerated at the Department of Defense. And so she is axed. So that's how you do not get on Trump's good side. But if you do want to get on Trump's good side, we have an example from sports, where the Los Angeles Dodgers, the winners of the World Series, visited Trump at the White House. They're starting to get some complaints from people back home, not too happy that they visited. And then there was the word salad that Trump tried to put out, trying to congratulate him when he's reading from his script. And you know, he doesn't know a damn thing about sports. He's reading from his script, and the script says something about the Dodgers had fallen on hard times because they had run out of pitching staff, and they referred to them as arms, because, you know, you think of the pitchers and their arms, right? And Trump goes off on this rant about, yeah, their arms. They had beautiful arms, big, beautiful arms, which is, you know, it's all about sport, and the sport is baseball, and just complete idiot. So a pox on the LA Dodgers and for any sports team that agrees to visit this White House. I've mentioned on a previous show, At this point, as you descend into fascism, every institution that is not explicitly anti-Trump is pro-Trump. And so when these sports organizations, these teams go to the White House, they are giving their tacit approval to all of the evil being committed in our name by this fascist government. So any sports team that goes to the White House, you are dead to me. One other person who is now dead to President Trump is Miles Taylor. Now, Miles Taylor was an author, wrote some anonymous books that were pointing out the behind-the-scenes skullduggery of the Trump maladministration. So Trump went forth and put out an executive order saying Miles Taylor stoked dissension, manufacturing sensationalist reports of the existence of a supposed resistance within the federal government. Blah, blah, blah. I direct Homeland Security to take away his security clearance and anybody that works with him, including the University of Pennsylvania, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what I had to comment on here was the title of the executive order. The title is Addressing Risks Associated with an Egregious Leaker and Disseminator of Falsehoods. It's like King Felon the First has gone truly mad here. I dub thee Sir Egregious Leaker, Disseminator of Falsehoods, Antipode of Verisimilitude, Clarion of Confusion. So mote it be by order of King Felon the First. Turning my attention to sports, I had a little cartoon flip through my social media feed that I found interesting and opens up a topic for discussion here. And the panels go like this. It says, on March 30th, a fencer named Stephanie Turner forfeited a bout because her opponent was trans. Her refusal to compete disqualified her from the competition. Here's the thing, though. Fencing is typically a co-ed sport at non-elite levels. Turner herself was competing against cisgender men and won a week earlier. Turner's actions prove that nothing about the trans athlete's moral panic is about fairness. After she made international headlines, a conservative group gave her a $5,000 Courage Award for her unsportsmanlike conduct. Her trans opponent went on to win 24th place at the competition. So it brings up the question about sex segregation in sports. The cartoon admits that fencing, at least at the non-elite levels, is a co-ed sport. So, and this woman won. This cisgender woman won at this sport. So I wonder, why is fencing not co-ed all the time? And if it is co-ed at the lower levels, why is it not co-ed at the higher levels? I don't know enough about fencing to say one way or the other. Seems to me a sport, though, that both sexes could compete equally in. And it makes me wonder about some other sports, because I've been researching this issue for a while, and I discovered some things that gave me pause. First of all, there's a case out there in the UK, apparently, of a billiards championship where the championship comes down to two transgender women facing off for the championship of a woman's billiards tournament, which makes me wonder, why is there sex segregated billiards? Why is pool something that you need to divide the men and women up for? You're hitting balls with a stick. You're all using the same size table. I mean, okay, a guy might be taller to be able to reach farther across the table, but really, why are we sex segregating billiards? Why don't men and women just all compete against each other in billiards? Taking another step there, I've heard of sex segregated darts competitions, and there being controversy over a trans woman competing against women in the darts competitions. And Why? Why is darts sex segregated? Throwing a dart doesn't require a whole lot of strength or flexibility. They even have sex segregation in chess. Chess. Now, I've asked this before. I've asked questions about this before out on social media, and I did get some responses. Charlotte Clymer, who's a transgender activist out of Washington, D.C., very accomplished, well-known, responded to me on this and explained that it's about inclusivity. It's about inclusivity, that it's not that men and women can't play chess against each other. It's that chess, for so long, was male-dominated. And so when a woman wanted to go play chess in a tournament or whatever, she'd be facing off against all these men, and it was intimidating, and there was sexism, and, you know, the women wouldn't want to compete. So they created women's tournaments for chess so that women could feel included and compete against each other. Okay, I can understand that point of the argument. You want to have inclusion, right? But then we go on to learn that a lot of these women in chess do compete in the men's tournaments and succeed. This came up, this whole discussion came around when that mini series was out, that The Queen's Gambit that was on, was it Netflix, I think, about the woman chess champion, right? So women are competing in chess tournaments against men in men's tournaments and winning sometimes. And they have their own women's chess tournaments in which men can't compete. Now, I get the point about inclusivity, right? That how the chess was completely male, and it was intimidating and frustrating, and women would have to deal with sexism if they tried to break into chess, right? It must have been tough. It must have been tough feeling discriminated against and going against everybody who was against you, you know, kind of like Jackie Robinson, right? Jackie Robinson, the great Dodger who integrated baseball, becoming the first black man to play in an all-white sport. So we're going to have, you know, we had Negro leagues, right? We had the Negro leagues that were separate for the black people to play baseball, and then we had the white leagues, the National League and American League, for the white folks to play baseball, and then we integrated them, the two of them together, and we no longer have Negro leagues, right? So if the women are integrating into chess and able to play against the men, why do we keep having the women's chess tournaments? I mean, it seems a bit unfair, doesn't it? Actually, what we're getting to here is coming around to my point. I've often made the point that calling them men's and women's sports is the problem. The minute we call them a men's sport and a women's sport, we have to define who's man, who's woman. And that's where we end up with all the transgender issues, right? I've been saying we ought to call men's sports open sports. It's the open category, and anyone can compete in it. Man or woman, trans or cis, everyone's welcome in the open category. Because that's really what men's sport is right now, isn't it? There's no rule saying women can't compete in the NFL or the NBA or Major League Soccer or hockey. Which one did I leave out? Football, basketball. They're all allowed to compete in the open category. None do, or very rarely you get a hockey goalie here or there, a kicker here or there, right? But they're allowed to compete. So make that the open category, and then the women's category, call it the inclusive category. Call it the inclusive category that's open to everyone but men. But cisgender men. Everybody but cisgender men can be in the open or in the inclusive category, the category we created for the people who cannot compete at the open level. With this sort of terminology, you could have women moving over to the open category and competing. You could have trans women coming to the inclusive category and competing, and nobody has to worry about being called the wrong gender. That's what I've often thought, is maybe we just need to change the term here. Because that's what we're getting. That's what the chess example says to me. The chess example says chess is open on the men's side for anyone to compete, but inclusive on the women's side where men can't compete. Which brings up another point. Where are all these Riley Gaineses and Matt Walshes, all these transphobes who are always out there complaining that if we let trans women compete in women's sports, they're taking a spot from a woman? If the trans woman's playing in the sport, they're taking a spot from the woman, like Riley Gaines, who finished fifth because she had to compete against a trans swimmer, right? Oh, we're taking a spot from the women. How come those people aren't calling out the chess example or the darts example or the billiards example? Why aren't they calling those out as taking spots from men? How come it is when the Queen's Gambit girl gets to go compete in the men's chess tournament and wins, how come she's not taking a spot from the man? For that matter, how come there's never any complaints about transgender men competing in sports? That's never an issue. We're never worried about the guy losing a spot. It's always the poor dainty woman, oh, who just is going to lose the spot because of the trans swimmer. There's another graphic out there that says that there are more sexual assault claims against Donald Trump than there are transgender athletes in the NCAA. That's absolutely true. There's like something like 9 or 10 in the NCAA. Anyway, those are my thoughts on the issue. I just think we should re-examine what we sex segregate, because I think there's very few things in sports that need to be sex segregated. Any sort of sport dealing with speed and power and height, I suppose, you might be able to make an argument for sex segregation, because as a set, men are stronger, faster, and taller. But aside from that, if it's a sport that doesn't require speed or flexibility, or height, or power, why sex segregate it? Darts, archery, shooting, chess, billiards. Hell, I don't know what else we could put in that category, but maybe it's time to start thinking about that. Clear up this issue of transgender sports just a little bit by taking away the confusion in the sports that don't need sex segregation. Time for our Boycott Idaho segment, our regular segment where we explain all the reasons, and we're up to 61 now, that you should avoid the handmade state. That's right, Boycott Idaho, and in particular, boycott the potato. No red state is more singularly associated with one product than Idaho and the potato. So forego those French fries, get yourself some onion rings, skip that loaded baked potato, have yourself salad. Do away with the potato chips, switch to tortilla chips. Let's make some noise here. Let those red states know that if they continue to mistreat Americans, we are no longer going to support them economically. Let's make an example of Idaho. Boycott Idaho. Avoid the handmade state. And today, we've got three updates to give you in our Boycott Idaho segment. First of all, the horrific story of the shooting in Pocatello, Idaho, by four police officers of Victor Garcia, 17-year-old from Puerto Rico, whose family's from Puerto Rico, I should say. 17-year-old autistic, nonverbal, and has cerebral palsy, was shot by officers within 12 feet. He was holding a knife. He was behind a 4-foot chain link fence. The cops showed up, brushed right past family, didn't ask what was going on, didn't try to get a read of the situation, just rushed right up to the edge of the 4-foot chain link fence. And when Victor got up and started moving toward them, they just opened fire when they clearly had plenty of room to just back up. There was literally a 4-foot fence between them. They could have backed up and seen if he was going to continue to come at them. He would have had to crawl over a fence before he would have gotten anywhere close to them. And the aunt of Victor is speaking out to the local news media. She says, quote, he called the cops so the cops could help us. Speaking of the neighbor, the police didn't even ask what the situation was when they arrived. The officers brushed past other family members and, quote, they didn't listen. They didn't even hesitate to shoot. They just shoot to kill. And Victor is still hooked up to machines at the Portneuf Hospital in Pocatello, Idaho. Has not regained consciousness since the shooting. They've already had to amputate one of his legs because of this shooting. Because the cops heard on a 911 call, there was someone drunk, waving a knife, and everyone speaking Spanish. That's what they knew. Drunk, knife, Spanish. And they show up in broad daylight. They see a young man with a brown face and a knife. And there was no other option but to shoot to kill. We'll keep updating you on this story. And we hope Victor Garcia regains consciousness. Another story to update you on. You'll remember back in February, in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, there was a town hall meeting, and Dr. Teresa Borenpaul spoke out at this meeting and was heckled by the presenter at the meeting and then accosted by plainclothes security officers who did not identify themselves, did not show any badges, who grabbed her, forced her out of the hall as she was screaming. Well, now the courts have made some recommendations, and officers have recommended criminal battery and false imprisonment charges for the private security guards who dragged her out of the town hall event. At the time, she was cited for alleged battery based on the fact that she bit one of the men who dragged her away. I believe those charges were dropped by the prosecuting attorney in the interest of justice and, quote, careful consideration of the law. So while the charges have been recommended, we have yet to see any of these people actually charged. We will keep you updated if charges are filed. And then our third story in Borcott, Idaho today is actually our 61st reason why you should boycott Idaho and avoid the handmaid state. And that is their passage of House Bill 83, for which a federal judge on Thursday has now blocked the law from taking effect. This is one of these show me your papers laws that was passed that has the state of Idaho usurping the jurisdiction of the federal government and taking upon itself to enforce federal immigration laws. This is the show me your papers law. And what it does is it creates new crimes in the state of Idaho called illegal entry and illegal re-entry that targets people who do not have proper immigration authorization or people who have already been deported. Now, according to this law, they can only enforce the law of illegal entry. Oh, it also directs the police to cooperate with ICE and turn these people over to ICE, right? So this illegal entry law exists. But they say, don't worry about it, because it's not like they can just go up to anybody and say, show me your papers. No, 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 no. They can only enforce this law if someone is suspected of another crime. Emphasis on suspected of, because you know how this is going to roll out, don't you? This is going to be the store clerk who sees the Mexican mom with her kids at the store and suspects her of shoplifting. So she's detained, suspected of shoplifting, and they come in and they find, oh, well, gosh, she didn't shoplift at all, but hey, while we got you here, show me your papers. And then if she can't produce a driver's license, a state of Idaho ID card, or a passport, she's then taken away, cuffed and stuffed right in front of her screaming, crying kids, taken away to some holding cell somewhere where immigration enforcement Customs Enforcement will be called to determine if she's legal or not, and then to haul her off, I don't know, probably to some concentration camp in El Salvador, maybe. Or it'll be the couple of Mexican guys standing out front of the convenience store, shooting the shit, and they'll be suspected of loitering. Yeah, that's the ticket. They're suspected of loitering, and then the cops will show up and show me your papers. And the next thing you know, they're being hauled off to, you know, El Salvador. Because you just know they're not going to have any problem with the white immigrant from South Africa, let's say, who might be in Idaho. Who maybe he swerved on the freeway, or he got into a fender bender, and when the cops go talk to him for crimes he's suspected of, do you think they're going to be asking him to show me your papers? This is all going to be used to go after the Hispanic immigrants in the state of Idaho. And the judge has put the injunction on this because, again, this has been shown in court after court. Texas has tried to do this, too. The ACLU always has to come and sue, and then it always comes back that, look, immigration enforcement is a federal gig. It's not your job, states, to be patrolling people's immigration enforcement status. And, of course, it's another one of these, cut off your nose to spite your face kind of laws, too, because Idaho is so dependent on immigrants. It's such a rural state. They need those people out there picking the potatoes, picking the strawberries. I guess potatoes aren't picked so much. They're harvested anymore. They got big machines for that. But you know my point. I'm just trying to say that this is just xenophobia writ large. And it should be struck down by the courts. We will keep you informed as to whether that or not that actually happens in this current Trump maladministration. Today in the Radical Rant, I want to talk about a graphic that I saw flashing across my social media scroll the other day, coming from ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And it was a little promotional graphic showing, their mission and what they're trying to achieve. And on the graphic, it says ICE stops illegal. And then it's got four things it lists of the illegal things that ICE is stopping. ICE stops illegal people, money, products, ideas. ICE stops illegal ideas? ICE stops illegal ideas. What ideas are illegal in the United States of America? This is thought police stuff, and they're saying it out loud. Now, I have some idea what they mean by the illegal ideas, because we got an announcement from the Department of Homeland Security, Canicide Christy Noem, announcing that they are screening immigrants' social media. Those are coming students on visas and such. They're screening their social media for evidence of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is apparently an illegal idea now. And what they mean by anti-Semitism, they don't literally mean students getting on their social media and saying, murder all the Jews. I suppose if you did say that, that would count. But what they're saying, though, is people that have support for Gaza, they're conflating the opposition to the genocide in Gaza, the opposition to the fascist tactics of Bibi Netanyahu, the opposition to the Israeli government. They're conflating that with anti-Semitism. It's the oldest trick in the book. You can't be anti-Zionist without being anti-Semitic. So they're going to police people's social media as to whether or not you agree with the administration's point of view with respect to Israel. We now have thought police. ICE is stopping illegal ideas. We're going to screen all the students for their anti-Semitism, but you know what? I don't see any mention of screening them for their Islamophobia. No screening for Islamophobia there. And no screening for transphobia or homophobia or any number of racist, sexist, xenophobic, misogynist ideas out there. Those ideas aren't illegal in America. Just the anti-Semitic ones, apparently. And of course, that the Trump administration doesn't give two figs about anti-Semitism. This is just their little excuse, their little cudgel to beat up on the students that don't like Gaza or support Palestine. All Trumpies care about Israel for and care about Jews for is to be their non-player characters in their apocalyptic rapture fantasies. That we got to get all the Jews together in Israel and convert them to Christianity before Jebus will come back. It's insulting. That's all they care about. This is just, they're just a bit player in their apocalyptic fantasies. And what we're turning into, this ICE, this mad rush to deport everybody that is a little browner than us, is disgusting. We get a report coming out of the Los Angeles Unified School District where ICE is sending plainclothes cops into the schools, lying and saying, oh yeah, the parents wanted us to come here for wellness checks. They just want us to check up on their kids. We're sending ICE to elementary schools to roust third graders who might be in this country illegally. That's what we've become. We are the concentration camp country. We are the disappearance off the street country. We have become the fascists that we always said we were established to fight. Illegal ideas. My grandpa fought in World War II. My family's been Antifa since the 1940s. We fought against the country that demanded you show me your papers. We fought against the country that weaponized anti-Semitism. We fought against the country that disappeared people off the streets and sent the undesirables to concentration camps. We fought against them over there so we wouldn't have to fight them here. And now we have to fight them here anyway. And they're our own countrymen. They're our own Republican Party, the party of Eisenhower, the party of Grant, the party of Lincoln, the party of John McCain even, has been utterly taken over by a fascist madman and his sycophants in finance who are doing it all just to cash in on the money, to the rapture freaks who are doing it just to fulfill their nihilistic dreams of an apocalypse, and for the actual Nazis among us, the actual cruel bastards who join groups like the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers or the Three Percenters, who stand against everything that America has always stood for. You want to be a promise keeper? You want to be an oath keeper? Yeah, look up that oath and how it talks about preserving, protecting, and defending the United States Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. You have become the domestic enemy to the Constitution. You have become the enemy of due process and equal justice under the law, and all men are created equal. That's the real story of America, is the people that America has subjugated, the people that America has mistreated and treated unequally. The story of America is those people standing up, fighting against the people like you, who originally founded the country as a slave-owning country, as a genocidal country, as an ecocidal country. The true story of America are those of us, the underdogs, fighting against you to make America live up to the promises you said America would live up to. We're the ones who do believe in equal justice under the law. All men are created equal. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we're not going to rest until every one of you MAGA fascists are turned out of office. And this time, unlike with the end of the Confederacy, we hold you to account. We undo the damage that you have done, and we reset our federal laws to be stronger to protect against the next incursion of fascism that should rear its ugly head. My sincere hope is that we come out of this death spiral of America into 2028 and the 2030s renewed with a sense of progress and patriotism to make this country the shining city on the hill again, to make it the envy of the world again, to, dare I say it, make America great again. All right, folks, that's all the time we've got for the podcast today. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. You can contact me by email at radicalruss@gmail.com. Contact my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalruss.com and nowhere else. And now time for your post-credits screen with just one more thing. And this is a bit of text picked up from the net where they're describing, some administration officials are describing their interface with Elon Musk. Let me just read from the post. Quote, I have been in the same room with Elon and he always tries to be funny. And he's not funny, like, at all, says a senior Trump administration official. Quote, he makes these jokes and little asides and smiles and then looks almost hurt if you don't lap up his humor. I keep using the word annoying. A lot of people who have to deal with him do. But the word doesn't do the situation justice. Elon just thinks he's smarter than everyone else in the room and acts like it, even when it's clear he doesn't know what he's talking about. End quote. Musk has gnawed at the patience of an array of high-ranking administration officials to the point that, according to this official and two others, Trump lieutenants have walked out of meetings and earnestly asked one another if they thought Musk was high. Administration officials joke to one another about subjecting Musk to mandatory drug testing, which Musk himself has said would be a great idea for federal employees. A lawyer for Musk has said he's regularly and randomly drug tested at SpaceX and has never failed a test. Quote, talking to the guy is sometimes like listening to really rusty nails on a chalkboard, says the senior Trump administration official, who adds that Musk is not much of a team player either. Quote, he's just the most irritating person I've ever had to deal with, and that is saying something. End quote. Glad to know there's plenty of love for Elon Musk there in Trump world. And oh, he passed drug tests at SpaceX. Ooh, boy, I'm sure those weren't announced in enough time for ketamine, which takes only 24 to 48 hours to flush from your system. Yeah, no problem with that. Anyway, glad to know he's as popular inside the White House as out. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, have a great weekend, and until next time, take care of each other.